Craig. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Do you have any tips on when you have a bad visual and you want to get it out of your mind? Any idea on how to get rid of those?
Yeah, I think what you got to go do is get drunk and get worse visuals.
All right, I like that idea. Oh, jeez. Well, OTR, here I come right after work. Oof.
Yeah.
Crushing a few Jaegers after that one. Interesting.
Exactly, yeah. Like, and the quicker you get drunk, the quicker you'll see different bad visuals. So you won't even remember. And then the memory gets fuzzy. Was I drunk? Did I really see that? And you can just kind of dismiss it that way.
A few interesting trades today. The Winnipeg Jets in Vegas. The Jets add Cody Eakin, and the Vegas basically just dumps him, gets rid of his salary cap. So we assume they're going to try to make another move. I've seen a lot of people wondering if they're trying to free up space to get Chris Kreider, which would be interesting. But what do you make of that deal first from both teams' perspectives?
Well, okay, so here's what's really interesting. I mean, I think with Little being out for the year and, you know, Adam Lowry being hurt, you know, I mean, Cody's quick and he can kill penalties and be disruptive with his skating. So I think it fits really nicely for the Winnipeg Jets. But let me ask you the question. I mean, Ken Holland's been talking about trying to acquire. Isn't that the exact type of player he's trying to acquire to play in the third line? And the cost doesn't seem to be very high. That's where I'm at. So it's interesting how one team gets in on a guy and you think, geez, that was the fit for exactly what the Oilers were looking for, or that's how it appears to me.
Yeah, I think, well, the Oilers, like, the fact that the Jets just ate all the salary, I think is probably the main reason. The Oilers, they would have had to somehow get Vegas to eat half. And I do wonder, though, do you think Vegas is trading within their division when you're 1 point apart?
Well, and that becomes another factor, right? And I'm not suggesting that exact same deal was available for the Edmonton Oilers, right? It's just more, you know, that type of a center, you know, trying to fit him into what you're trying to do. You know, just the description of what Kenny has talked about, it just seems Cody Eakin fits it. Now, maybe there's no way to make a deal, but, you know, you're trying to be creative at different points and times. And sometimes, you know, the art of the deal is in crafting the deal. And Kenny's done a lot of deals, so I'm not going to start trying to suggest that I know better than him. But, you know, it's just interesting, you know, the salary, you know, would Edmonton have to eat some more, division rival, you know, so close? I mean, all those things factor in. But the one thing I will say about the division rival, Winnipeg's a competitor for Vegas as well, because Vegas isn't clear of competing for the first and second wild cards in the Western Conference.
No, that's totally fair. Yeah, it's a little bit less. I agree with you. Yeah, we talked about that too. So kind of surprising for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those deals that, you know, I think that, you know, Dylan DeMello and now Cody Eakin, I mean, I think that the Winnipeg Jets have played so hard, you know, in with injuries and with the, you know, the situation that happened with their blue line from last summer into Bufflin, you know, and I think Kevin Seladeroff has just said, hey, listen, I'm not going to do something reckless, but I'm going to try to give this team, you know, a little bit of, you know, support and some strengthening in different areas. I think that this deal and the DeMello deal does exactly that.
Let's take a look at the Bruins and Ducks deal. Your thoughts on the movement they had?
Well, I mean, I think, Jason, that when you look at Andre Kashe, I mean, the caveat is he's got to stay healthy because he's had some injury woes the last couple, but he's a good player. And I think the fact is they've been looking for somebody to play with Jake DeBrus. Jake, you know, pushes play, drives the net, plays down low. Krejci is so smart, makes plays with the puck, knows where everybody is on the ice. I think Kashi is just a nice fit for that line. In fact, almost a perfect fit for that line. He can score, he can make plays, he's really smart, and he's going to play behind Pastrnak. So he's not going to be facing the opponent's top defense pairs. So that gives him a really good chance. And much like the Coil deal last year, you know, you look at a specific area of your team, you try to strengthen it. I think the Kashe deal does exactly that. And I think for them to be able to rid themselves of David Backes' contract, you know, it cost them a first-round pick. But, you know, it's the price of acquiring Kashe, but with it, you know, you got to pay a little bit more if you want to shed that contract. And so I think the Boston Bruins did nicely. I think the Anaheim Ducks did really nicely getting a first-round pick. Axel Anderson is what I would call a B prospect. He needs time. He's got to become a little bit – he's got to work his way to work quicker, to play quicker, play faster. But he's a puck-play defenseman. But, you know, you're looking at a 4 or 5 if he's able to reach his potential.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. And it was interesting yesterday, Ken Holland spoke about how early in his career as a GM, he would react near the deadline to what other teams did. He was in, you know, they're battling Dallas and Colorado and that, oh, geez, they're doing that. So then he would make a move almost just because they made a move, and he felt that never worked. So he's like, now I don't react to what other teams do. I only focus on my team and how we're going to go. And I could see how you would naturally be like, oh, geez, look at the team we're a point ahead of or behind. They make a move, and now we automatically have to. So I'm sure you would probably have to stop yourself because your natural instinct would be to counter.
Well, you're competitive, right? So, you know, you're looking to try to do everything you can to help your team. And at the same time, oh boy, look at what they did. Oh, we got to go do that. But just because of what they did doesn't mean that you going and doing something strengthens your team. And, you know, there's two parts to the trade, too. The one part of the trade is making sure that you strengthen your team. You get a player or players in there that, you know, you really gives you that boost in that area that you're looking to get a boost in. And also, who you're going to remove if you're removing players from your team. Because, you know, you're removing players that have contributed to this point in the season. You know, the vast majority of players are good people. And, you know, if you don't make the right move and you just go and do reactionary moves and now you don't strengthen your team and also you remove players from your team, it has a double whammy effect. And that's the other thing you got to be careful of as well, not only when you're assessing a trade, but in the cautionary tale of chasing what other teams are doing. You got to be really careful for those reasons.
Greg Bunn joins us. He's the ace analyst for TSN. It's Friday. It's 4:13 here on TSN 1260. Craig, when you know, there's reports that maybe that some people are really pushing hard to get Jeff Petrie out of Montreal. As a GM, how hard is it to resist the urge of trading for, you know, what you know, out of Carolina might have been a good young D and then a first rounder, and it's going to hurt you short term, but it might really be a good thing long term.
Listen, I think Jeff Petrie's a really good player. Jason, you know, there comes that point in time where you gotta look at your team and say, okay, are we in a mold where this young player, this first round pick, where is he going to be, or where's that all, that whole package going to be in 3-4 years time? And again, I use the word reckless. You don't want to be reckless chasing something. But if you're a good team and you're looking, you're saying, well, you know, that player is 3 years away and that first round pick is 4 years away, and you're looking at your team and you're saying, okay, here's where we're at. And here's where our team is going to be, not only now, but in 3 or 4 years' time. I think you have to look seriously at moves like that. I'm a big believer that as a general manager, you have to be looking at your team all the time as what it is and where it needs strengthening and where the opportunities rise to give your team the best opportunity to achieve. So whether that's trying to find a way to get in the playoffs if you haven't been in the playoffs, I think that's exactly what Jim Benning is doing. I think that that's what Ken Holland is considering doing. And, you know, then there's other situations where you're looking at your team and you're saying, okay, this is a chance for us to try to, you know, we think we can be competitive and we can get to the conference final and give ourselves a better shot at winning the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's a Charlie Coyle deal. And, you know, they signed him last, they traded for him last year. He had a year left on his contract. He comes in, they go to the final, and now they're able to sign him. They're able to re-sign him or sign him as a potential unrestricted free agent. So I think that there's not one hard and fast rule. You got to be looking, but you have to try to maximize your opportunity as best you can as a manager. And again, without being reckless, without being silly, and also making sure that you recognize what your team is and what that addition can mean. I think Jeff Petrie would be a terrific addition to any team's blue line, you know, trying to bolster it. The other player, Jason, that I think would be a really good addition is Jonas Brodin. He's another player like Petrie, a year left under contract. Come in, you got two playoff runs with them, and then you can see what unfolds in unrestricted free agency. But Montreal and Minnesota, they're both teams that have to be looking to the future. So those are two defensemen I'd be seriously looking at.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, how surprised are you how the Oilers have played without McDavid and Neil and Klefbom and Cassian?
Listen, you know, like, they're so well coached. And, you know, you look at their special teams. I was so impressed with the game against Boston because they were competitive. Boston kind of started off that game carrying play, had a power play. But the penalty killing has been terrific for the Oilers. The power play has been very good for the Oilers. And you watch how they play. They don't beat themselves. They don't take silly penalties. They don't put themselves in compromising positions, positional-wise. And that's what Dave Tippett does, and I think he's done a terrific job. Now, full disclosure, I thought, you know, the Klefbom injury, I said, geez, this could be the injury that could sink the Oilers' playoff hopes. But after watching the game against the Boston Bruins, I am completely walking that back. I think that the Oilers are so good. Watching Ethan Bear play the other night and how competitive he is and understanding how well Dave Tippett has coached his team, I think they have every opportunity to be a playoff team. And I think that that's why Ken Holland is trying to find a way within his parameters to try to bolster this team. But certainly, you know, if you're not a well-coached team and a team that can, you know, find a way to bond together and play together in spite of whoever's out and who's in the lineup, I don't care how good your team is, you're not going to be very good. Dave Tippett has done exactly that with this Oilers team.
When you're looking around the rest of the NHL and some of the teams that are maybe trying to figure out are they or are they not in or in out of the playoffs, is it that easy to make that call when you're now, what are we, 3-4 days away from the trade deadline and you're right up on it? You know, let's say you're 3-4 points out and you're like, are we in or are we out? Are we in or out? That's got to be something that, you know, makes general managers lose their hair and lose sleep.
Jason, I think definitely losing sleep. I think that the other part about losing your hair, I mean, I don't know if you're genetically inclined that way, but you go gray, I can tell you that. You know, if I was genetically inclined, I would have lost hair. I just went gray. So, but, you know, that being said, Jason, you know, because, again, I go back to the competitive spirit, the competitive nature. You're competitive, right? And you're watching your team. And, you know, Ken Holland, after that game against the Boston Bruins, I can guarantee you, he is so wired that night. Like, he's going, boy, I like this team. Boy, did they show me a lot. But now, what can I do? How can I find a way? And Kenny's always in his mind thinking. So it does keep you awake. And, you know, in the scenario that you presented, you know, where you're on the edge, right? Like, you know, the hardest thing to do is to just say, you know what? We're not going to try to chase anything, right? But at the same time, you know, competition is what keeps us, you know, fired up. It's what keeps the nights long, and it keeps you awake, and it keeps you thinking about it. So I don't think it's that easy to do. And, you know, it's easy. I know at times I say, hey, listen, this team has to sell. That's where they're at. But it's a lot easier said than done. And keep in mind, too, that there's a lot of stakeholders at play when you make that decision. Your players, most importantly. Let's not forget that. And then you have your other stakeholders, your fans, your corporate sponsors and everything. And nobody wants to throw the towel in on a season. And so you have to keep that all in mind and how you're going about it and what you're doing. So not an easy decision at any point in time. And, you know, it leads to a lot of angst when you're leading towards that type of a decision.
Craig, always good to talk to you. One last one for you. We always hear, oh, deep draft. And, you know, who knows? I got to go back and look. Some drafts being called deep, and then 5 years later, they don't look as deep as you thought, and then vice versa. But, you know, the draft picks for this year's class, and, you know, thankfully, I really haven't had to dig into them yet. I'm kind of enjoying the change of pace in Edmonton, which is quite nice. But you look into the second half of the first round, because, you know, Oiler fans, that's likely where they're going to be picking. You know, are you seeing more forwards or defensemen in the second half of the first round?
Geez, that's a good question. I don't know if there's more or less of the number of defensemen or forwards. I think just by the nature of a draft, there's going to be more forwards available in the second half of the first round. But, you know, when I look at the top end of this draft, there's not a lot of defensemen. I mean, there's Jamie Drysdale, Jake Sanderson, and then after that it falls off. Then where does Caden Gooley come in here? And then you start to look at some other players like that, the Swedish defenseman, Wallander, where does he fit in? So, you know, every draft is different that way, but your point about a draft being deep, you know, you go back and look at a draft, okay? And I don't care what draft you look at. There's some that are a little bit better. But on average, there's about 45, 48 players in any draft that play around 400 games or more in the NHL. That's just what the numbers tell you. And half the players in the league were drafted in the first two rounds. And then, you know, the other players come from the rest of the draft. So, you know, when you take those numbers and apply them, I can never tell you who, but I can tell you what the numbers tell me. And, you know, there's always high hopes for players. You draft players in the third round, you draft players in the fourth round, you really like them and you should. But the reality of it is that not all those players are going to develop to the extent that you thought they were going to, or the extent they thought they were going to. So that's the barometer that I use. I mean, at the end of it, this draft looks like a really, really excellent draft with respect to top-end forwards in the first, I don't know, 12, 13 picks. And then after that, it kind of balances out through 40, 45, somewhere in there. And I would say that's probably equal between, proportionate between forwards and defensemen. And like I said, Drysdale and Jake Sanderson, Wallander carrying the mail for defensemen in the top half of the first round.
Great stuff, Craig. I appreciate it. We will chat with you next Friday. Thanks for this.
We will. Yeah, guys, have a great weekend.